Frank Allen Interviews, starring Frank Allen.
Hello and welcome to Frank Allen Interviews. My name is Frank Allen. Welcome back to the show. It's been a while since we did a Frank Allen interview, of course, but we are very, very happy to be doing a Frank Allen interview yet again. We are very, very happy to have a gentleman that people who are familiar with the podcast will already be familiar with, of course, Mr. Jordan White.
Why, hello there, Mr. Allen, and thank you very much for having me back on your program.
Oh, it's my pleasure. It's my pleasure. Now, you, Mr. White, you have made a lot of news recently with the lawsuit that you have recently settled out of court before it went to trial.
That I have, and let me just tell you, it is me getting my just due, my just desserts, my due, my rightful, very much rightful monies.
Well, that it sounds like it is, but why don't you tell us a little bit about this trial?
Well, as your listeners will recall, back in the 1940s, I had a podcast called Shaped in Wax, in which I had a bunch of silent films that I had created and developed, and of course produced. It wasn't the most popular podcast in the history of podcasts, but it was a podcast and a very early one at that, so it is kind of a historical legend when it comes to those in the know about podcasting.
Right, which, I mean, that's how I heard about it, and of course everybody who listens to this podcast already knows about it, because we've talked about it before.
Absolutely correct. But recently there was a company called Allen Enterprises that started a television network called Allen Cable Television, and I put it on the very first night that it came on the air, only to discover that they had stolen all of my ideas from my silent films and put them on the television as moving pictures with sound. I was aghast, I've got to tell you. I immediately contacted my lawyer, Mr. Matt Roma. We served them notice, and they were off the air with an injunction in less than 24 hours.
Less than 24 hours. Wow, that's really impressive. Now you said you were convinced that they were stolen from your podcast. Why is that?
Well, if I told you about the shows, trust me, you would know that they were pretty much directly taken right from my ideas. Not to mention that, as I said, my show is kind of known amongst podcasters, and my intelligence seems to indicate that the person who started the company originally, it wasn't the person who was in charge when I sued them, of course, but the person who started the company originally was a podcaster themselves. So it seems pretty likely that they would have heard of my shows and been totally able to steal all of them for their cable network.
Well, I mean, okay, that's an unsubstantiated theorizing.
But it seems very much within the realm of possibility, and that's why Mr. Roma and I took matters into our legal hands.
That was very wise of you. Now, obviously, we already said that the case was settled out of court. What can you tell us about that?
Well, fortunately, part of the terms of my settling the case was that I could tell anyone I wanted to do anything I wanted to about the trial without them stopping me. They, in fact, have a gag order put on them about the trial, and especially when pertaining to contradicting things that I say about it. So I'm free to tell you whatever I want to.
All right, well, please, tell us as much as you can / want to tell us.
It will be my pleasure. Basically, Mr. Roma and I took a look at their shows and took a look at my sound films, and we built what we think was an ironclad case right against them. We could show that they had stolen all of them pretty much directly. And when Mr. Roma revealed that to their lawyer, Matthew something or other, they almost immediately came back saying that they would settle for every ounce of money that Allen Industries was worth.
The worth of the entire company, and that was a lot?
Well, my accountants haven't quite figured out how much it's worth just yet. They are working on it as we speak, because as you know, I'm sure you realize, having retired from the entertainment industry, I have no interest in running a media conglomerate, so I've pretty much shut the business right down. I'm having them sell off all the assets, settle all debts, and collect everything else that's left, and make myself a nice little retirement fund.
Interesting choice of things to do. I mean, I'm sure that will come out to being a lot of money. Probably, one would assume.
Well, it's a multimedia conglomerate. I can't imagine that you can run a multimedia conglomerate without it being worth some sort of money.
No, you couldn't. I mean, you certainly couldn't run one like that. So, tell us about the gentleman who did own it before you. Did you talk with him directly?
Yes, that was Mr. Franklin Allenton. He was a good man, a smart man, a man who knew how to do business, but a man who had unwittingly bought a business that had stolen all of its ideas. And that was his ultimate downfall. If he had known about my podcast to begin with, he could have gone into it with open eyes. But no, if you don't know your history of podcast, you are doomed to repeat it. He paid the price for that ignorance, but hopefully he learned from his lesson now, and so did his children and his children's children, if I have anything to do with it.
Right, okay. So it's fair to say then that Franklin Allenton has been crushed.
Well, I'm not sure I'd put it that way, but I certainly defeated him in legal battle.
Would you say that... what was his mood when it was over, though? Was he incredibly dispirited? Did he cry?
I certainly didn't see him cry. His eyes may have moistened a tiny bit, but he was a very stoic man. If there was one word I could use to describe him, it would definitely be together. So that's a guy who's not gonna weep freely. That's as much I can tell you. Whether when he got home, in his privacy of his bedroom with his door shut and all the windows barred and closed, if he shed a tear or two, I couldn't say. But that guy's a man's man, and I'm proud to say I defeated him in battle, be it legal or otherwise.
Well, it's legal, though, right? In this case.
In this case, yes, it is legal, yes.
Well, I hope that he did cry. So, I mean, that's for my own personal matter, but that's a side thing. But I do want to thank you again for being on this podcast. Now, you've brought with you, if I may be so bold, some audio clips that you and your lawyer put together to be part of the case against Mr. Allenton and his company in the case that it did go to trial. Is that correct?
Yes, that is absolutely correct. And this is some of the audio files we played for him and his lawyer when they realized that they were pretty much defeated already from the beginning.
Excellent, excellent. And I want to thank you because this is, of course, an exclusive, a waxwork.com Cast and Wax Frank Allen Interviews exclusive. Nobody else is going to be broadcasting these clips that prove the stealing of your shows, correct?
Well, not for at least a week, Frank. I did want to thank you very much. After all, you were the one who let me know that my show...
No, I mean, it's no problem. A week is fine. A week is fine, and I do appreciate that.
Well, like I said, it's the least I can do.
No, you don't have to be so thankful. Okay, but I'm very glad to have them on here. So let's introduce them. Let's see what we've got here. Now, this first clip is from your original podcast, right?
Absolutely it is. This is from the silent film series Titanic Tales, the forward series, an episode called The Really Long Wire.
Did you want to give us any setup for it?
Well, of course, of course. In this episode, Jack Rockchild and the Time Teens have gone back in time from the future, where they normally live, to the present, and they're trying to stop a couple of giant ants from interfering with the very long wire that connects the three computers in the world.
That sounds really interesting. Let's hear it.
But all of a sudden, where there was absolutely nothing before, Jack Rockchild and the Time Teens appear, and all the innocent witnesses seem to put their hands against their cheeks and make expressions like, oh my goodness, as if they were saying something to that effect. Of course, you can't hear what they're saying because it is a silent film. Jack Rockchild puts his hand on top of his head and points at one of the giant ants who's attacking the cable. A car comes up and it says, look, one of the monsters is attacking that cable. Patty McGillicuddy puts the back of her hand against her forehead and kind of sways back and forth as she speaks, and the car comes up and says, how will the computers be able to connect to one another? Jack makes a signal that seems to indicate, come with me, and they all run towards the giant ants and start popping them right in the head. They all start punching and punching and punching, all with that fisticuffs that they do. Warrior Dog, Harry Floppy Ears, jumps on top of the ant for a minute and starts flapping his gums for a sec, and a cart comes up and says, hey boss, I fetched him good, didn't I? The ant collapses on the ground on the top.
Right, so that's from Titanic Tales. And then this next clip is from a show on Allen Cable Television, correct?
That is correct. This is it. This is from the very first episode of The Baffling Adventures of the Bright Batch, of course featuring the Bright Batch, led by Steve Waterford.
All right, let's hear it. My understanding is very similar.
You'll see for yourself, won't you, young man?
Popper, how's the tachyon raincoat holding up?
We'll be breaking through into actual reality any second, Steve. We better be ready. The Metroaches are already interfacing with the Wi-Fi technology.
Understood. As soon as we get there, look up everything you can find about Metroaches on your laptop.
It's too late for that. We're here. Look, there's the Metroaches.
Professor Wendell, as you know, you're the only person here fully informed about Metroaches. Please, let us in.
As you should know, Metroaches are bleeding-edge technophages and exoskeletally enabled automata, created linking stem cell technology to the green technology of the early 2000s. They leave no carbon footprint, but they leave 6 silicon footprints.
Well, it's pretty good for a turtle, but pick up the pace next time.
Zink, do you think it might be possible to create some kind of nebula fugue and trace the silicon footprint?
Well, if we titrate silicon with all the stuff that's next to it on the periodic table, then we'll easily be able to track them and locate them faster.
Excellent. Let's do it.
Bright Batch Blaze!
Try and keep up, Shellhead.
Wow, that really was very similar. I'm kind of shocked that they were that similar. I knew they were similar, but I didn't realize that was how close they were. Alright, well, do we have some more clips?
Absolutely we do. I brought a whole litany of clips.
What have you got here?
This is from one of our debate shows. It's called Communism or Stupid.
Okay, right. I can understand that.
This was a show where we would debate the tenets of communism and decide whether they were stupid or not. Usually they were, but still, it was a debate show, and it was, like I explained last time I was here, it was actually secretly a comedy show. People were improvising the characters.
Right. No, I remember that. That's right. Right, yes. Let's hear the clip.
All right. On the left of the debate is General Rusky Ruskovsky. He's got a ridiculous-looking phony mustache, and is wearing an outfit that's got him decked out as some sort of crazy Russian general of some sort. Oh, he looks like a mean one. Big bushy eyebrows and a fat, fat belly. Over on the right side, of course, you've got President Sam America, the American president. He's done up to look exactly like your Uncle Sam with his red, white, and blue outfit looking resplendent in the black and white film. He's got a smile brighter than the sun, and you can trust him from here to tomorrow. In the center, of course, is me, looking wonderful, as the moderator. General Ruskovsky furrows his brow, points his finger up in the air, and his mustache wiggles to indicate he's talking. A card comes up saying, in bourgeois society, capital is independent and has individuality, while the living person is dependent and has no individuality. Then we cut back to President America. He starts giving a big old belly laugh. He's holding his sides, it's so funny. He starts pointing at Ruskovsky and shaking his head, chuckling away. If you could hear it, you know that laughter would be really, really contagious. Then, of course, he stops, smiles at the camera, camera, give us a wink, and says something. And a card comes up and says, "That's stupid." Now, as a moderator, of course, I start chiming in at this
All right. That was communism or stupid. Now, you just made fun of, a Karl Marx quote? You would just have them read a Karl Marx quote each episode and just rip on it? Is that all it was?
Hey, now, don't knock it. You can get loads of material out of just making fun of one thing. Trust me. Lots and lots of episodes.
Oh, no, I know. I believe you. I mean, I know all about that. I'm just saying, that's all it was.
Well, don't make it sound like it's not much. That's a lot.
Okay, no, that's okay. Good. And what was the name of their show that ripped us off?
Well, they missed the entire point. They took a show that was a good, upstanding show about communism being stupid, and they twisted it all around, made it about religious beliefs. That's not what I wanted at all. That was definitely not what the people who wrote the Constitution intended. It's like they got it all backwards completely. To be honest with you, it sounds to me like they're some sort of communist pinkos.
Well, yeah, but I mean, if they were communists, they probably wouldn't, you know, try to show it to make money.
Hey, don't be so sure. The communists have lots of tricks to make it seem like they're not communists. Taking money for things is just one of those tricks. And it's an obvious one. You ever notice that they sell copies of the Communist Manifesto? Ah, think about it.
Oh, all right. Well, all right, let's listen to their clip.
Well, as you know, evolution is called the theory of evolution. That means it's only a theory. It hasn't been conclusively proven by science. So I think that in order to broaden the education of students around the country and expose them to as much as we possibly can, and so that they can make their own informed, intelligent decisions, we need to expose them to all kinds of theories, including evolution, creationism, and any other reasonable theory that might come along regarding how life might have come about on Earth.
General Samuels, you are a general in the U.S. Army. I am the president of Russia. I think I know a little bit more about educational things than you do, all right? You may be decked out in some sort of military uniform, but that does not make you smarter than anyone else. Evolution is a theory, but only in the same way that it's a theory that the Earth goes around the sun. It is essentially proven. We all believe that it's true.
That was pretty similar.
Wasn't it, though? Wasn't it?
And they did flip it around. They did flip it around quite a bit. And I noticed that they repeated even like a phrase. I mean, they had the characters similar, but they used the phrase decked out, which you had used once or twice. I don't remember.
I know. And that was definitely a significant moment in my court case. It was very, very significant. I said, you know, look at this. Decked out. Ah.
Right. So, okay. And I think you have one more clip, right?
Absolutely. And this one is just, you know, just reprehensible. But let's hear it.
Now, this is from your show called Tripper and Clark. Correct?
Tripper and Clark, absolutely. That's my detective series, and I couldn't be more proud of it.
Well, let's hear the clip.
At that point, the sneaky-looking mustached villain looks over both of his shoulders before sneaking into the diner. What he didn't see was Tripper and Clark peeking around the corner, watching it all happen. Tripper pulls out his gun and starts walking right towards that diner, but Clark grabs his shoulder. He shakes his head before gesturing it over towards the diner, and a card comes up, says, "It's too dangerous." Tripper adjusts his hat, shakes off Clark's grasp, and wiggles his gums, saying something. A card comes up and says, "I've got no choice. Hold on to your gun and keep it cocked." And then he's off, chasing after that villain.
All right, a pretty straightforward, you know, detective show.
That's what I thought. That was what I thought. And yet, here they are. They not only rip off my idea for the two characters, they then twist it around and make it something sick.
Now, wait, what? Now, what is the name of their show? What? It's sick?
Well, the name of it's not sick. The name's Draper and Hart. But trust me when I tell you, this is a sick, sick show.
All right, well, let's hear it.
We know Borfield's lackey entered the Red Diner at 1600, ate a 7-course meal, stayed after closing. He can only be hiding in there with the loot now. I've got to go in.
Draper, no, it's too dangerous. Just stay here with me.
Hart, I have no choice. If we don't do it now, they'll succeed with the greatest bank heist in the history of the month. Just back me up. Hold on to your gun. And keep it cocked.
I love you.
Do you see? Do you see what I'm talking about? This is a disgusting and terrible, terrible show.
Well, they really, I mean, they did steal a lot of what you did in that. I mean, they took lines directly from your show.
Well, yes, they took lines directly from my show, but I'm talking about the fact that they made it all queer. Why'd they have to go and queer up my show? I'm doing a show about a pair of dicks. I'm doing a show about a pair of man's men. You know, the kind of hard men that get things done. And they have to turn it into something fancy. Some sort of little butterfly show. That's not my show, I tell you. That's not my show. Well, it is my show for legal purposes, of course. That's why they stole it from me and all that. But I'm just saying, they corrupted it.
Well, I gotta say, you make a very persuasive case. Having heard all that evidence, I would say yes. It seems pretty clear that those shows were stolen. Thankfully, as you said, the lawsuit is settled entirely. There's no more loose ends. No, nothing. No one else is needing to be, you know, tried. No one else needs to be punished. It's all settled once and for all.
Absolutely correct. Absolutely correct. Mr. Franklin Allenton and I got the business done. We shook hands. We signed contracts, and all the things that needed to get squared away are all all squared away. Like I said, they're selling all the parts of the business, and I am going to be filthy rich, I certainly hope.
And so they're not making any of these shows anymore. All the shows are completely discontinued.
Absolutely correct. The day after the deal was done, I had them bring every single employee of all of Allen Industries into one giant room, had them all sit down, got in front of a microphone in front of them all, said to them, "Hey, guess what, folks? You're all fired. Now get the hell off my property, and I will not have you arrested. Go!" You would never have guessed you could see that many people running that fast. They got the hell out of Dodge as quickly as humanly possible.
Well, I'm glad it's all settled. And I again, I'm only sad that Franklin Allenton didn't suffer more, but, you know, at least he suffered a bit, and that's good.
Well, I suppose it is. It's for the best.
That it is. Well, listen, Mr. Jordan Aloysius White, maker of the Shaped in Wax podcast, thank you so much for giving me this exclusive.
Not a problem. Like I said, I owe it to you. You, after all, did me the service
of... You know, you don't owe me. You don't owe me. You know, what's right is what's right. So, you know, now that everything is settled, it's all good, and everything is pleasant.
It was certainly pleasant doing the show with you. That much is for sure.
It was very pleasant doing the show with you as well. Listeners, thank you very much for listening. This has been a Frank Allen interview, and I guess it's going to be 2 weeks, and I'll be back. See you soon.